yourself a glass, sit for a spell. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
I am Dan Dunn. Welcome to the show. And what we're drinking is a 2019 Robert Mondavi Spotlight Rosé. I'm going to tell you a little bit about this delicious wine in just a few minutes. In 1992, MTV debuted a show called The Real World, which was billed as the true story, seven strangers picked to live in a house and have their lives taped to find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real. And everybody from my generation watched, really everybody did. You had to. It was a required viewing back then. The show was actually inspired by a 1973 PBS documentary series called An American Family. And The Real World would eventually become the longest running series in MTV history, as well as one of the longest running reality series in TV history, period. And a lot of people credit it with launching the modern reality TV genre. Again, I loved the show mainly because it was, you know, just good, clean family fun, as demonstrated by this clip that I'm going to play for you right now. Here we go. Good, clean family fun on The Real World. Let's do it.
I never got enough balls to talk to me like that.
Because you were yelling at me.
Shut the
yelling at you right now.
That's what you need to do. Realize that. I said, oh my God, you know, I'm done.
She was done, she said. I'm done. What she did is some violence, real violence on The Real World there. But anyway, that was a joke. I mean, most of the time it was sweet, sweet show. The Real World spawned a number of spinoffs, most notably Road Rules, which ran from 1995 to 2007. That series followed, I don't know, five or six strangers. They got in an RV, they drove around, they got clues, and they had missions that they had to complete. It's as fun as it sounds. Really. I love the real world. I love Road Rules. I'm a big fan. And then in 1998, they did a spinoff to the Road Rules called Road Rules All-Stars. And then that got renamed Real World Road Rules Challenge. And then eventually they abridged it to simply The Challenge. And that brings us to today's guests, both of whom have played prominent roles in MTV's Real World Road Rules and The Challenge milieu. They're also the hosts of one of my favorite podcasts. It's called Brain Candy. And I listen to it when I walk my dog. And we're going to talk about it. In fact, I was listening to it today while walking my dog. And I found the material, frankly, on Brain Candy on the latest episode to be quite disturbing. And I'm going to talk about that with the host of the show. I'm thrilled to welcome to this show Sarah Rice and Susie Meister. Hi.
Hello.
Thanks so much for taking time out of your busy. No one's doing anything, are we? We're not busy. Are
we
busy?
We never say no to a drink either.
Yeah. Well, what do
Cheers.
You think? Yeah, and
Cheers.
I got the wine. Let's bring up the wine right away.
Okay.
Here we go. Cheers to you. Let me.
Cheers.
There we go. So we couldn't do this in person, obviously, but so we're doing this over Zoom. But what I did manage to do is get the same bottle of wine sent to the three of us. And again, it's Mondavi Spotlight Collection. It's a rosé.
It's very nice.
Sarah, Susie, are you rosé fans?
Oh, yes way.
Yeah, Sarah's a big rosé kind of gal.
Yes.
And I don't discriminate.
You don't?
I feel like it's a breakfast wine.
It can be.
It's sure. Like, it seems like the kind of wine that's like okay before noon. On like a Saturday or Sunday. Probably.
I just have found that anything now, kind of anything, well, at least the first 2 months, I found anything went. And then there was this spark of hope where it was like, we're coming out of this, right? So I should straighten my shit up, right? I should stop what I've been doing the last 2 months because we're going to be out of this. And guess what? I think we've come back around to the beginning of the pandemic. Agreed. So I'll be drinking in the mornings from here on out.
We're mornings. Back.
This pairs great with toast.
Toast, and it goes well with despair, too. Abject despair.
What wine doesn't, though?
So I will tell you about this. So I don't know how much you know about this. This rosé is a winery exclusive, which means you can only get it at the winery, which means you're fucked if you're not us, because you can't go to the winery right now. But I don't know if you're getting, for me, I'm getting this like cranberry and watermelon.
That's what
I
was going to say.
You were going to say that?
Yeah, the berry one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Isn't
like
it?
There's a berry going on here.
And it's, I think so. This is from a Napa Valley winery. And Robert Mondavi obviously has access to some of the finest blocks up in Napa. There's a vineyard up there called Toe Calan, which is world famous. And some of the grapes that went into this are from Toe Calan. So I think you're getting this a very bright, fresh rosé, wouldn't you say, Sarah?
Yeah, and maybe would I be crazy to say a little stone fruit?
No, you would not be crazy.
A little stone fruit.
Anything goes on this show. Anything goes. Whatever you're feeling about this wine, hints of yak wool. Mm-hmm.
Wait.
Keith Richards' ball sack. I'm smelling it. Yeah.
They say spotlight, is that the word that denotes that it can only be bought at the winery?
Listen, not? Susie, I'll ask the questions here. Okay. Take it easy.
I need answers.
No. I don't know that that's why it's called spotlight, but I do know that this is only available, I believe, at the winery for about $30. Mm-hmm. At the Mondavi Winery.
Wow, fancy.
It's a nice wine.
So what they're doing, the Spotlight Rosé is the official wine for Mondavi's doing these virtual event series called Summer Sundays. They used to do a summer concert series. So, you know, in some ways, Summer Sundays is very sad because now we're doing it on the internet. But it's a bi-weekly event. Mm-hmm. They put it on the Mondavi YouTube and the winery's website. And they have musicians. They just had a guy named Matt Nathanson play. And so what you do is you're encouraged to buy the concert kit, a bottle of the wine, and you could sip along, and the winery donates some money to the school district up there in Napa, and you can feel good about yourself while you're drinking.
Who doesn't like that?
Right?
I always feel good about myself when I'm drinking.
I haven't always, but I feel bad about myself a lot of times the day after drinking.
Oh, man. Well, wait, how old are you, Dan?
As a therapist, I choose not to comment on that. As a podcast host, that's hilarious.
So let's talk a little bit about the podcast. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Brain Candy, I really do enjoy it a lot. Except today, I was listening to the most recent episode, and it began innocently enough with you talking about Susie's pathological aversion to whistling.
Right? Hates it.
Pathological.
Was it like that kind of whistling or just joyous whistling you were thinking?
Joyous. Public whistling.
You just don't like whistling.
I have thought a lot about this since that episode or joy. And I don't like that it's distinctly a male thing. I don't know any women that wander around besides Sarah whistling publicly. And I feel like it's attention seeking. I'm not into it, Dan.
Well, I would...
guilty.
I mean, couldn't you say that it's also just an expression of, you know, a joy of life?
Yeah, but keep it to yourself, can it?
How dare you? How dare you be happy in front of me?
Because I feel like they're infesting my area.
Well, you also mentioned farts as well, right?
Yeah, because that is a nose, you know, pollution.
Sure. But I think whistling and farts, we can all agree, fall into a different category. Like if someone came up to me and whistled, like, you know, I don't know, like a Snow White or something, I'd be like, oh, look at that person. Now, if someone came up and farted in my face, I'd be like, they're not a happy person at all. This is an aggressive, gassy person.
We're different. Yeah. I see it in the same way.
She's just as offended by my whistling as my gas.
As your gas.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? I won't fart in front of her, but I sure as heck will whistle. And now I'm kind of terrified to do either.
What if you could whistle out of your ass? You'd blow
God.
Her mind.
I would argue, I think that might be like another word for a fart.
That like is too, it's a double negative, and then I love it.
Now you love it. So for an ass whistle, you're all for.
Yes, supporting that.
Maybe we could rebrand farting to smelly ass whistles. And call
well,
it right now.
You've included the smell in there. And you've given us a descriptor.
Ass whistling. Yeah. But then what happened then is the show then took a very dark turn. Mm-hmm. Right after, you know, whistling. Whistling's not that objectionable. But then Sarah brought up a story about a man who was disturbed, that was a mentally ill gentleman, and who attempted to kill himself. Now, this is the part I was unclear on.
Right.
Was lopping off his Schwanz how he was going to kill himself? Or did he think, you know what, before I kill myself,
yeah,
I'd like to do something. I'd like to make an even grander gesture. Because I'd even say cutting your dick off is a grander. Killing yourself, you kill yourself, you know? I'm not saying it isn't a profound thing.
You
pull the trigger, it's all over. But cutting off your own penis, right, as a member of the penis-possessing community, I would say that I couldn't think of any other body parts, actually, that I wouldn't sacrifice before my penis. Mm-hmm. That includes
like
my head.
Like a bit of rage.
Yeah, so he cuts his dick off, mm-hmm, and then they...
passes out from the pain, et cetera.
Et cetera.
And then they put it back on. 22 hours later?
23. Got to give them all the credit.
Wow. Hold on, let me have some more wine.
It was a record length of time.
Right.
Can he
and we have to look for the
use
for the,
it though? Is it usable?
The silver lining. Oh, excellent question. Going to need to do some follow-up research. Didn't even think about that.
Because
what good's
he
a penis
a boner.
Oh, that's right. He did have a successful, that's how they knew it worked, because he had a successful erection.
Wow.
But like work and an involuntary erection are kind of like maybe two different things.
Right. We don't know about ejaculation, for example.
Don't you think his story, it's going to be a weird story, because like, let's say you go down on that guy and you just go, oh, what happened here? What happened here? Funny story. Like, that's kind of the end of the relationship, right? Interesting story. One time, I was feeling a little low.
As an appetizer to my suicide.
I
was feeling low. Pulled out a knife and cut off my own dick. Where do you want to go to dinner? Later.
I don't think he's going to need to use it, is what we're saying.
And maybe the you know, I don't want to judge, but maybe the mental state one must be in to go to that length might not pull the kind of tail who would ask such questions.
That's true. It just feels like, what would be the next worst way to kill yourself? Because if he was intending to kill himself with a dick, so then I guess it was like, I'll cut off my dick and then I'll bleed out.
Well, like, is the worst thing, is the question like, what's the worst way to go where you still survive and it's like awful? Or is it like, what's the worst way to go? Period. Two different questions.
I did see a documentary once called The Bridge. Have you ever seen this?
Oh, God.
Okay.
Yes.
So do you remember? For those of you who haven't seen it, it's a documentary. A guy set up a camera for 2 years. At the Golden a number of cameras at the Golden Gate Bridge, where I think at the time about 50 people a year would kill themselves by jumping off the. And so essentially, the documentary was to wait for people to do this and document it, and then do some follow up. And you know, most people die when they do that. But one guy, remember the guy that jumped and lived,
mm-hmm,
and he hit the water and like shattered his legs and everything.
And he only lived because there was a seal underneath
that came up and got, remember, but the great part he said is he thought when he felt the seal hit him and bring him up to the surface, he thought it was a shark. And he thought to himself, Jesus, I just survived jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge and now I'm going to be attacked by a shark. But it wasn't, and he lived. But that's mm-hmm. got to be, but I'm talking about like painful, what else could you do? Hang yourself by your testicles. See, I'm hung up on the genitalia.
See, it might be we might want to, that might be where the, because right. whatever that is.
Well, I'm getting older and I know this. I know one thing about these testicles now at this stage in my life, they're not supporting my body weight. Yeah, at this point, my testicles
are just. Do you feel insecure about
God.
That? I'm just curious.
About my testicles?
Yeah, do you care that they are.
Hitting the floor?
That the ears hang low and wobble to and fro?
Because I think they still look nice on guys like that, but I know that they are sensitive about it.
Well, the fact that I brought it up means I can't lie now and say that it isn't something I think about. I mean, I would like, I was out with a friend the other day. We played golf because you're still allowed to do that. So I went out and played golf and I said to him, I go, what would you give to be able to go back for a week and just experience what your body felt like when you were 20? Just to feel that, physically feel that way, where you don't get up and your knees crack and you don't hurt and your balls aren't fucking hitting your knees, and just to experience it. Would you do it if you could? That was what I said, but not what would you give. Would you do it if you could? Because, and he said no, because he would be so depressed when he had to go back to his 50-some-year-old self again. Yeah.
Because like you knew what you were going, like you knew it would be gone.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh my God, in 17 hours, I have to go back to being
old me. Well, that's what they say, the youth is wasted on the young.
That's right.
It's like a whole thing.
But no, I'm not self-conscious about it and I did think about that because I was in a relationship for about 4 years that ended not long before this. And then, you know, I was thinking about that, like, oh man, I was so much younger when I started that relationship. And now I'm like, am I going to be perceived as being as old as I am or whatever? And, but it's worked out. It's all good. I'm fine with it now.
Wait, so do you think in those 4 years that your balls have dropped dramatically?
No.
And here I am wanting to explore if he's old, not older, but also wiser. And Susie's hung up on the length of his testicles. I'm asking the wrong questions.
I mean, I think my balls, there's probably been a slightly perceptible dip in the balls, but, you know, nothing that you're going to see and go, boy, I'd like to slap those back up.
Right. He should just chop these off and end it.
It's over. Yeah.
Sarah's appalled. I love it.
How's the wine, Sarah?
Excellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good
stuff. I need way more of it when I'm thinking about, I don't know what's worse is the idea of for some reason chopping off. Well, no, it's worse with the penis.
Yeah, I agree. Is it worse for you?
Do you worry about your breasts?
No.
I mean, because women's breasts go down. They start to, you know, do stuff. Sarah. Gravity always, as Radiohead said, and gravity always wins, right?
These fakers are just...
They're just going to stay right there.
Yeah.
Can I get a fake ball sack?
Yes, you definitely can. Yes, you can. You can get implants, and people who have had testicular cancer where they've had them removed can absolutely get fake ones.
For them.
There's even fake ones for dogs. No, but
my real ones work.
They're...
Can I just get them up? Can I get like a ball sack?
A ball lift?
A tuck?
A ball lift.
Listen.
Sack tuck?
You know what? A ball lift will come when somebody starts judging men for having saggy balls.
Right.
Same way that the breast lift came from people judging women and their saggy boobs. Any society where they don't care about that does not need breast lift. So there you go. Just start judging balls and then... Somebody will invent a ball lift and then they'll be like, I don't know.
We need to look this up because I bet there is a ball lift.
For sure.
We're going to take a quick commercial break here. We got to pay the bills. And during this break, we will look up ball sack lifts. We'll tell you if it's going to happen. We'll be right back after this.
This is Colin Donnell and you are listening to my favorite podcast that begins with the letter W. Take that, Marc Maron.
What do we have here? Ah, yes, Mac Weldon. Oh, how I love me some Mac Weldon. Mac Weldon is a premium men's essential brand that believes in smart design and premium fabrics. You probably heard about their industry-leading underwear. Hell, I'm wearing a pair right now. They're so much more than just an underwear company. They really are one-stop shop for men's basics of all kinds. From socks to shirts to hoodies to their new adjustable storm chaser rain jacket, Mack Weldon's wares really are the longest lasting, highest quality items on the market. They believe in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. I went to MackWeldon.com recently, ordered a whole bunch of stuff. Took me 10 minutes and now I'm rocking a killer new basics wardrobe. I got some 18-hour Jersey Crew neck undershirts, couple of pairs of Ace sweatshorts, and no-show socks. And Mack Weldon really does value its loyal customers. That's why they've created the Weldon Blue Loyalty Program. Here's how it works. Create an account. It's totally free. Level 1, place an order for any amount and never pay for shipping again. Level 2, once you purchase $200 worth of products from Mack Weldon, not only will you continue to receive free shipping, but you will also start saving 20% on every order you make for the next year. Oh, and Level 2 also grants you access to new products before they're released to anyone else, as well as free gifts added to future orders. And now Mack Weldon has a special offer for you, What We're Drinking listeners. For 20% off a first order, your first order, visit MackWeldon.com and enter the promo code DRINKING. They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep it, and they'll still refund you, no questions asked. Mack Weldon's mission is simple: to make sure all your basics and beyond are smartly designed and that shopping for them is easy and convenient. And I personally promise you this, Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. Okay, we're back with Sarah Rice and Susie Meister. I have done some research. I put my crack research team on this, and the testicular lift is known as a scrotoplasty. And it's when they get in there and they lift your ball sack up. Maybe they tighten it up for you. Just like, I guess, sort of like Botox, but for your ball sack.
Well, I would say it's more like a facelift for your ball sack. Botox is temporary.
And
I mean,
Sarah already has a patriarchal conspiracy theory about whether it's covered by insurance.
Yeah, because some of the reasons for why they do it was because it becomes uncomfortable for, I don't know. And if that's covered by insurance and like a vagina, what did they call it? Vaginoplasty? Right, is there a name? What do they call it when the?
Yeah, is it labia?
Labia.
It's called freaking me out.
And if that's not covered and the ball lift is covered, I'm mad.
Listen, Sarah, don't blame me because you chose to be a woman, okay? You know, life's not fair, but I didn't do this to you, okay?
Take responsibility.
Yeah.
Now, I want to bring up something else. So Brain Candy, your podcast, which is available everywhere, podcast stream, was the culture winner of the podcast awards.
Can you believe
in 2019? Yes. What does that mean exactly?
Best society.
Congratulations.
Podcast.
We didn't even have to blow anybody to get it.
Man, what's the world coming to now? What does it mean? I mean, it sounds very impressive and congratulations.
They just gave one podcast award to each category, I guess. And we are in society and culture, and it was voted on by the fans. So that made it very special and lovely.
Yes.
Okay.
And they just can't get enough of us, Dan.
Well, you know, you guys are really good at what you do. You're very interesting and fun to listen to. The show according to your podcast page bio, Sarah's the right-brained element of the show. Best known for, you were on MTV's Real World Brooklyn and The Challenge. But it says, I love these bios, man. I love my bullshit bios too. They're great. Don't let the label of reality star fool you. She's one smart cookie. You were raised by artist parents. What were your parents? Were they painters, writers, singers?
My mom was a wardrobe stylist in the film industry, and my dad was an art director. So they were like making costumes and building sets. And yeah, it was creativity all the time.
And you're from here?
Born and raised in LA.
Wow. You're sort of an anomaly, right?
I know. Yeah. Santa Monica Hospital. Who would have thought?
That's crazy.
I think I live like within a couple miles of where I was born now, which is totally weird to me.
Can you tell from my, I've lost a lot of my accent, but can you tell that I'm not from here?
No.
No, I'm not.
Where are you from?
No, you deaf. I would think you were from the East Coast.
Philadelphia. Oh. Philadelphia. And that brings up somebody who was born in the same state as me. Susie was born and raised in Pittsburgh. And then
my parents were losers.
They were, well, me and you both, sister. It's a Pennsylvania staple.
Peg's a lovely lady.
Yeah. And then you kind of went right to MTV, right? Not long after high school.
Yeah, exactly. I had just graduated. I was 18, hadn't done anything yet.
Wow.
And then they swooped me up. And,
what year was this?
1998.
Virginal
Christian.
How old were you then?
18.
Oh my God. All right. So now I'm ashamed to admit I had a little bit of a crush on you when you were on the road.
Why are you ashamed?
But because you're a little younger than me. Yeah. Now I'm, I must have been creepy then. I was trying to do the math.
I bet you were.
I was creepy. I was creepy years old when I was watching you on, man. Yeah, no. So
you look so young.
I know.
Oh, I'm a spring chicken. We're not talking about my age. So now Susie got a PhD in religious studies at the University of Pittsburgh. Is that right?
Yeah, man.
Now,
I feel like MTV bankrolled that education.
I feel like it's been obviously a very long time since that was on, but weren't you kind of pretty religious on the show?
On the first season, for sure. That, you know how they used to cast like that? There would always be some super religious.
And then there'd be somebody that's going to get in your face the whole time. And right?
Yeah.
Who was that?
Challenge her morals.
Yeah. I mean, our cast was pretty tame, and it was very much like that back in the day. I mean, even the, you know, more scandalous people wouldn't even be cast now because they'd be too normal.
Are you on a network?
Yes.
Well, yeah,
we have your own, right? It's Wave, yeah. Wave Network. Mm-hmm. You started it.
Yeah.
But were you on a network before that or just did your own thing?
We were with CBS Radio for a while, but we made like $3. So we were like,
yeah,
let's do this ourselves.
Yeah. I'm on Dan Harmon, you know, Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
I'm on Starburns Audio, his network. Yeah. They do
How's
a lot
that?
For me.
What do you think?
It's fun.
You sound like a voice actor.
Do I? I've done some voiceover. I was the voice.
You almost sound like Rick.
Do I? No. Really?
Yes, you do.
All right, I'll have to hit Dan up and be like, yo, dude.
Oh, my God. You totally sound like that. You should do that.
Let's do it.
Just saying.
I want to talk a little bit, though, about the real world. Because this was kind of it was very, very influential show. And obviously the shows that it spawned after that. But I was thinking about how some of the more iconic moments on that show that really made people, they were kind of groundbreaking moments for television that happened on The Real World, wouldn't you say? Like, I mean, obviously, what was it? San Francisco season 3, Pedro Zamora had AIDS. And I don't think anybody had ever seen, certainly hadn't seen anybody that was HIV positive on television before, but were there ever really any openly gay people on TV before? I don't remember that. And I felt like it was so important, you know, and he had a same-sex partner and they got married. And these were just things you simply did not see. And it reminds me because, you know, obviously 2020 fucking sucks, but beyond COVID and all that other stuff, there's still so many struggles going on. But that reminded, when I was doing some research to do this show with you guys, it just reminded me of the struggle's real and it's constant. That happened a long time ago, and here we are, and gay people are still having to fight their asses off for their rights. And I have no point other than I need more wine.
No, I
wanted to depress myself by having, and then
I'll
have more
what
wine.
Depresses me is that I get the impression that the production company that makes the show and also MTV really love to hang their hat on that incredible work that they did by being progressive in their casting and telling these stories that no one was telling. But then it's almost like it just stopped. And then they kind of pivoted to low-hanging fruit. And that's what I wish would change. I wish they would, because it was still good storytelling back then and kind of provocative and people would fight and hook up and all that good stuff. But it also had a larger, more important point. I miss that.
There was heart.
And I think a lot of, you know, when you look at some of the pivotal things, most of them, I think a lot of them did happen a long time ago. There was Genesis facing homophobia, a little kid. That was a Boston season, and Karamo coming out to his housemates in Philadelphia. There was the girl from Hawaii, Ruthie, with the alcoholism, and then the famous slap in Seattle. So a lot of these shocking, unforgettable moments happened earlier on in the season. But what I think was great about it was it really promoted a lot of dialogue and dialogue that I think actually led to change, and then the change came and the other side went, okay, we got to swing this motherfucker back. And you know, and that, and let's face it, that's kind of what happened, right? We all, you know, beyond even MTV or those shows, Obama got elected and we're all like, Jesus, this is my God, look, we've done it. And little did we know, the other side was going, oh no.
Oh no, you didn't.
Oh, we're coming for you sons of bitches. And they came hard. all over us. Hey all, being on lockdown these past few months has been tough on all of us. Something I've found to be extremely helpful in maintaining my sanity during this challenging time is sticking to daily routines. Maintaining a sense of structure can help prevent you from feeling overwhelmed, and I highly recommend you keep doing the little things you used to do on the regular in the pre-COVID era, like shaving, for instance. And fortunately, Harry's is here to help you look your best while saving you a little cash along the way. Yes, Harry's has your grooming needs covered with high-quality blades as low as $2 each, delivered straight to your doorstep. Cut out the middleman, manufacturing blades in a German factory that's been honing the craft for a century, which means you get incredibly high-quality blades at factory direct prices. And during this trying time, you'll feel a little better about your purchase. Not only is Harry's donating 1% of proceeds to nonprofit organizations devoted to helping provide access to better health care for men and veterans, they're also giving $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the U.S. That's what I call good karma for you and Harry's. What We're Drinking listeners can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/drinking. That's harrys.com/drinking. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. So go to harrys.com/drinking to start shaving better today. So where were we? You don't even want to know where we were. We just had some
ball sacks.
With ball sacks, we had some technical issues. So we were talking about let's talk a little bit about your experience and how being on those shows brought you two together.
Oh, it was magical. My very first season was Susie's very last season. And we were actually just reminiscing about this the other day, like taking a walk down memory lane and how we felt like, now I can speak for both of us when I say we both felt like kind of, I don't know, like different on the challenge. Like we didn't really fit in and fit the mold of what was typical on there. And we connected in our differences. And it's so weird that on there, the difference is like, you're smart and nerdy and like doing the Sunday crossword puzzle.
It's like opposite world. So good behavior opposite world is stigmatized on the challenge in particular. And we're, you know, compared to people on the show, we're pretty, you know, straight laced, just normal ladies, like to get up, you know, before noon, pay our bills.
Imagine.
School, read books. And that ostracized us. And then, so we like trauma bonded.
Yes. We trauma bonded. We're having a therapy session. Sorry,
right? That's okay. No. Got it. I'm here for you. I kind of aged out of that. So I didn't watch a lot of the challenge. I caught some of the early years, and it was, I will say this, there were some really compelling characters. The one guy who was a frightening dude from Boston.
CT.
Like, if I were making a list of people that I would not ever want to cross, that guy would be one, because he was a powder keg man, right? I mean, but he seemed like a pretty badass guy, right? And then who's the guy that won all the bananas? Mm-hmm. So these characters are that's their job, right? Like that's what they've been doing. Have they done well doing that, do you think?
Not just their job, it's their identity. It's like the lens through which they see themselves and they see the world. And Johnny in particular has certainly made a lot of money and a career and a brand out of the whole thing. I just interviewed another cast member and he's like, what's up with this Johnny Bananas guy? He has merch. Like the older people that did Real World can't believe that you can make a career out of the show, because you couldn't do that back in the day.
Mm-hmm. So then you guys bond, and then when did Brain Candy start?
2015 or 16, late 2015.
Yeah, I think we were still doing the podcast when I did my very last season of the challenge. So yeah, I think it was about 2015 we started up.
Yeah. And if you're not familiar, the last show that Sarah did was a big deal because she was partnered with Johnny Bananas, and they were rivals, but they were partnering rivals at the time. And then there was a twist at the end where Johnny got to choose whether to split the money with Sarah or keep it. And he famously chose to keep the money and run. So Sarah is sort of this sacrificial lamb icon now.
Wait.
The nice guy finished last.
Explain this to me. Why did? Is it the same reason why men get to have elective surgery and you don't? Like, why did? And they get paid for it. Why did he get to choose whether or not to give you the money?
Oh man, I feel like a whiny baby when I ask the answer this question.
I brought it up.
There were challenges along the way where there were individual challenges, and if you won those, the person who had won the most of those by the end of the final challenge got to be the decider. And he won. He beat me in. We were neck and neck and tied, and he beat me in a challenge where he had to. We got to trade off who stood on a log the longest and while the other person slept. And I was under the impression that we were like going splitsies and everything was fair. And he was like, no, you sleep. And he stayed on a log longer.
So he got $250,000 for that. Mm-hmm.
So you lost out on $125,000?
Well, I mean, for trusting someone, basically.
Were you friends with him prior to this?
I mean, that's like always the question that goes around. I wasn't like Susie level friends. We were enjoyed each other's company on the show. I would definitely say that. And we had spent time together in life outside of the show. But these are, you know, in his own words, it was like all's fair in love, war, and challenges. I totally understand what he did. I have absolutely no problem with that. It was the how things were handled like afterwards and the conditions by which he won that money that I had took issue with, I guess.
Susie, sounds like a dick move to me. I'm not seeing how you're being very gracious, Sarah, I think, but Susie, what's your read on it?
Yeah, right. You come to the right place because Sarah's super nice and a great sport, and so she doesn't like to see anything bad, but he basically won the money by cheating. I've talked about this extensively. This isn't some bombshell. And off the air, he was fined $5,000 or something for the incident, but he still got to keep the money because it's great TV. Let's face it. They were psyched that he made that decision because that's a fantastic episode. And so, you know, the collateral damage was just sort of Sarah's student loans.
I'll tell you what, if I ever see Johnny Bananas, I'm going to kick his ass.
Yeah, man.
Just for you. So I'm going to go all Philly on his ass. You're like, yo, dude, that ain't right.
Go CT on him.
Right.
Yeah. CT, man, that guy, Jesus Christ. I remember somehow, because I'm in quarantine, I got sucked into the YouTube vortex one night. And
I've been there.
It probably started with music, but somehow something popped up and it was like the greatest moments in the challenge history. And I believe it was CT lifted.
Yes.
Was it Johnny Bananas? Onto his back. Yes. And carried him off the thing, and I thought, that guy is strong.
I was on that season when he did that, and I had never met CT or seen CT in real life before, and it was like my second or third season, so I was still, you know, like, just a baby.
Wide-eyed.
Yes. I saw him, and I remember, and they have it. Like they chose to put it in the show. I saw him and I was like, that is the largest man I've ever seen. You almost feel like you want to just climb him like a mountain. You've never seen anything like it. He is humongous. And I was so intimidated and I felt the same. So however intense you think he is on TV, I will tell you he's more than that in real life. And he just like you can just hear him coming. His voice, the grump. He's got a presence.
But do you like him? Is he a nice person?
Oh yeah, I really do. Yeah. He's actually a really sweet and totally nice guy. You just like he knows how to turn it on.
I would think that must be a cool sort of friend to have. I would think as I hate to say as a woman, but yeah, I will say it anyway. Is it like, if you find this guy that's like this fucking giant who could, and then he's really nice, there's got to be something comforting about that. Like you're like, oh, this guy's really sweet. And if anybody fucks with me, he'll kill them, you know?
He is like that. He's very genteel and chivalrous in that way.
You know, and to speak on the part, and this is really like anybody who's on the challenge or on any reality show that gets, you know, such a small percentage of who we are and the actual time that we're on there gets shown. And see, and it doesn't really show the full picture, take into account every single thing that's going on in everybody else's life or their life outside of the challenge. And the times where you saw CT get, this is never to excuse behavior or anything like that, but it's just to shine a light on a kind of like a bigger issue that's going on, is that there were like some really traumatic things going on in CT's life when he went on that challenge where he chose to act out violently. And it's the same thing when we see a lot of these really awful things that come from these shows, is they're, it feels a little like exploitative, or it feels like where people all in there are in their lives are kind of taken advantage of for ratings, and we don't really get the big picture. And then CT kind of has to live in this.
He's like a caricature.
He's a caricature. Yeah. You're a caricature. Susie had to like work to break the mold of I'm an evangelical Christian, like, you know, virginal, and they want to typecast her as that. And it feels like they're still like, you're only this. I'm only, you know, the like nerdy girl who gets like loses all the time, or like, you know, finishes last or gets the short end of the stick or whatever. They kind of put you in this
hole. They flatten you.
Yeah. And we see it over and over and over, and it's super fun to talk about, but it's like, I don't know, not always the best. Not to make this a downer.
No. It's, I mean, obviously, you know, I've had some experience with reality TV as well. And not being on it myself, but just friends in the industry and whatnot. That's what they do. I mean, they cast their look, the shows, it's like everything. And, you know, it's funny when we talk about the influence of the real world. I spoke about that early on in the show, in some ways that are detrimental, I think, to society. It also influenced what now passes for news, right? Because they saw this dynamic where it's like, okay, let's take the gay guy and the girl that hates the gay guy, and we'll put them together and we'll have them duke it out. Let's take the white supremacist and let's take the black guy and we'll get the, and that was a thing that played out a lot in the real world. And I think all forms of entertainment, and that's what I'll say about most televised news now, is entertainment, is that's the formula they copied, was that's magic right there. We can get this. We know this asshole is going to yell at that asshole. So let's put them together and get them to go. I'm not saying the people on the show were assholes. What I'm saying is, we're typecasting you. We're typecasting you based on, we don't want to know about the nuance in your life. We don't want to know about anything else. We just want you to be, like you said, in the case of Susie, she's the sweet little innocent rube evangelical girl who doesn't know it. And then you're going to get put in the house with the male slut or something like that, you know, and let's watch sparks fly sort of.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah. And I mean, but look, you can't blame them. They said it in the tagline for the show. Let's watch what happens when they start, you know, getting real. But so Susie, were you raised evangelical?
Yeah, I was in a very conservative Christian home and was very naive and sheltered. And that used to be a character that they would cast. And I think that in particular, I was appealing to them because I was that, but I was also like in high school, most flirtatious. So there was this sort of weird dichotomy that they wanted to watch unfold as I became a woman. And, you know, I love it because back then it was sort of, it's nice to have a soundtrack to your 20s. It is.
Yeah.
But I love to, what Sarah and I do, where we kind of just inform the audience of like what they're actually seeing and kind of unflatten it and make it so that people can be more informed about what they consume.
I follow you on social media, and I would say that your views now, would it be fair to categorize them as progressive, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I remember having this thought because I do recall that that was the box you character. Were in. That was the character when you were younger. And I thought to myself one time, boy, you might have missed an opportunity, because if you would have stayed uber conservative and all that, like, you are catnip for Fox News, right?
Like, yeah, I wrote an article about
White House
you would be the, on the OAN network or something.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be you, because it's eerie how much of a type that is in the conservative media, is the attractive, intelligent blonde who is closed-minded or at least pretends to be. And I really truly believe that a lot of these people that are on Fox News or somebody, I don't believe Donald Trump believes most of what he fucking says. You know, I mean, I think he's a malignant narcissist and that informs everything he does, but you would have had a future.
Yeah.
You could have been Megyn Kelly right now. You could have been Megyn Kelly.
And instead she's just Susie from the podcast.
I'm just sitting here drinking with you guys.
No, that is an excellent article that she did write on.
Where can we find this?
I put it on Medium, and I wrote about how when I would go and meet with agents, because I wanted to do hosting work, and they would say, well, are you conservative or are you willing to pretend to be? Because we could get you a job right now with Fox News or a conservative outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's just how they do it now. It's more about your look rather than your ideology.
Is that how they do it now?
Yeah.
Because when I used to go in, they'd just say, will you blow me? And I'd be like, all right.
I wish.
And it
that
never
would be
got
so much
me
easier.
Anyway. You know how many dicks I sucked and didn't get a single job? It's crazy.
You were robbed.
Robbed.
You must not be very good at it.
It no. must be his low-hanging ball.
It's my, I was like, how about you get my balls? Because there's a lot of fun to be had down there. You can train for boxing while you're doing it. So yeah, Susie, I guess the point being is you fucked up by having principles
and you've
done yourself a
and
disservice
getting a doctor.
With all this education, you know. All you kids out there, remember, you want to get ahead in this world.
Be amoral.
Be amoral.
Give BJs.
And Sarah, you're a therapist.
I am a marriage and family therapy associate until I finish my many hours.
So why haven't I ever gotten married? Tell me that.
Well, I mean,
that is a good question.
Let's unpack that heavy suitcase, shall we?
Do you want to get married?
No.
Well, there you go.
Sarah, that'll be $200.
You are good.
You are good.
I want to get married? I'm thinking about what's going on in my life right now and how this answer could affect what's happening. No, I'm, do I want to get married?
Oh, I see.
I would do it. I would, my previous relationship, the one I told you about that ended, you know, before Christmas she was a lot younger than me. And so that was a big problem. And I thought that I understood that it was not going. I mean, when I say, you know, like 20 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And I knew that wasn't going to work, but I could do it now. Isn't that fucking thing? I bet women are sitting home going, really?
Like,
oh, my God.
You don't have to convince me.
Wow, what a romantic. I could. If someone held
You're
a gun.
You're open to it.
I mean, if you were presenting me with options, such as, would you rather be attacked by a great white shark or get married?
Yeah.
I'd take the marriage, I think.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. The thing that I've learned or that I hold on to is that there is no normal. There is what works for one person doesn't work for somebody else. So if marriage is not something where you find a lot of people have very fulfilling relationships where they do not get married. And what does that
I've
mean to you? And what
thousands of those. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. It depends what you want for you. So sometimes we feel this intense pressure and we like, oh, I want to get married. I have to get married because that's what, like, I don't know, some rule says I'm supposed to do, or that's what society tells me I'm supposed to do. But that's not where you find your ultimate happiness. Then it's going to be like chasing the wind. You can't. So you have to first look in the mirror and find out what is it that I really want. And when you decide, figure that out, everything else kind of, you got to work from like, the point B to like and back.
Backwards.
Like, yeah, backwards.
Okay. Now let's talk about your own personal relationship with wine.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
The show is called What We're Drinking, after all, not Who's Dan Possibly Marrying.
I'm enjoying this.
Yeah,
no,
me too.
This is great. Now let's. How are we doing on our wine? Where are
we? I'm filling up right now.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
I'm a good halfway through my bottle.
I'm getting there.
Oh, wow. Through your bottle. My God.
Yeah.
I'll catch up. Don't worry.
I'm like one third.
So what do you, Susie, you already indicated that you are an equal opportunity wine consumer, but you must have there's not one. Let's break it down. Let's start red, white, rosé.
Yeah, I do love a red. Like, if all things are equal, I'm a red kind of guy.
Are you an American red? You're like a Napa Cab? Are you a Bordeaux? Are you Burgundy? Are you?
I love a California red. Full bodied. What's that area that I love in particular? I can't remember now.
I know that you like Central Coast wines.
Yeah.
And
Paso Robles.
Yes.
Yes, that's the name. Yes,
Paso Robles.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
I mean,
it's almost like almost like I should write a book. Oh, I already
did.
Do you
have a book? What's your book
I've
called?
Written four books. My most recent book is called American Wino, A Tale of Reds, Whites, and One Man's Blues.
Really cute, Dan.
That's a great name.
It's more of a memoir. It's a memoir. American Wino is about my brother died. My brother drowned 10 years ago on the 4th. It was 10 years on the 4th of July.
No.
He jumped off the Venice Pier, like fucking around, and got caught in a riptide and drowned on the 4th of July, 2010. And then Wino was, when he died, I went back to Pennsylvania. We had a memorial back there. And on the way back on the plane, I met a woman on the plane. I wasn't trying to meet a woman on the plane. I did meet a woman on the plane. We stayed together for about 3.5 years. So I was sort of in this weird state of suspended grief where obviously I was grieving my brother, but I wasn't by myself yet. And I wasn't. So fast forward to 3.5 years later, I had just finished ghostwriting a book for the guys from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And I just finished that book. My relationship just ended. I was living in Marina Del Rey on the beach and I was having wine one night and had music blasting, dancing around in my underwear, thinking I'm at a crossroads in my life. What am I going to do now? And the answer was, I'm going to have more wine. So I just kept having more wine. And then at some point during the night, I drunkenly thought, I'm going to have all the wine in America. And I wrote that down. I wrote it down on a legal pad, all the wine in America. And then the next day I Googled it. And that's when I discovered that they make wine in every state in the United States. And that was where the idea from American Wino was born. And I pitched it to my editor at HarperCollins and she said, yeah. And then in the fall of 2014, I got in my truck and I drove around the United States by myself for 4 months, ostensibly to become the leading expert on American wine, but really it was to fix myself.
Process the grief.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, the Philadelphia Inquirer described the book as Eat, Pray, Love meets Sideways while on the road.
Which is what you want.
And that's a great book for men, too.
Yeah, I know. So the book was, it's a memoir, but it's not, but there is a lot of wine. There is a lot of wine stuff in there. And obviously I started my trip in Napa, which is where the wine we're having now is from. And then I went up through Oregon and Washington and then you sort of drop off the cliff of wine quality from there. And I went to Big Sky Country but I loved those parts of the trip. I absolutely cherish, you know, some of my favorite parts were being in Montana and Wyoming and then going down into South Carolina and North Georgia and going to a winery in Louisiana and places like that.
That's so cool. That's amazing. I love that. I can't wait to read your books.
We all host a book club and everything. So we're
the reason I'm bringing this up is in my notes right here. It says Brain Candy Book Club WTF ? So when are we doing American wine? When are we doing American Wino in the book club?
I think it's time.
We drink a lot of wine in our wine club. I mean our book club. That was a slip.
You know what's funny? I've done a ton of those.
Yeah.
I've been invited to a lot of book club parties and things. It's almost always women, which is
we call them meetings.
Meetings.
So it's professional. So it's like official. We could call them a party. It's ridiculous and silly.
I call them
like
parties.
You're serious.
But yeah, I've done a lot. I mean, the book came out years ago, but hopefully we're hoping there's going to be the book's in. No, I'm not going to talk about that. Coming soon. We'll say that.
That's cool.
But yeah, so I'm ready when you guys are to be in the brain candy. But what do I need? Who do I have to blow to get in the brain?
No, it's available. We're open.
No blowjobs?
Well, I mean, we can do that, but just separate, just free, pro bono, kind of, pro boner.
You'll just be like pointing people out for me to blow. Yeah, no, I'll do it. I mean, if it get me in the book club.
That's lovely. So, I'm so impressed.
Tell us about the book club. What happens there in the meetings?
Yeah, tell them, Sarah.
We pick three books every month. Susie picks a book, I pick a book, and then we do a... what do we even call that? Like our
like
library?
A bargain book that bargain you can get at the library.
Yeah. So
Can I say this though? Can I ask you this?
Yeah.
You say you pick a book, Susie picks a book.
Yeah.
If who's going to pick my book, and does that mean I'm better friends with that person?
It's probably going to be me.
Probably.
All right.
And here's why. Because
Sarah, are you talking right now? Because
I can't hear you.
My good friend Susie just said something. I feel like he cut her off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Susie. What were you saying?
I noticed that. All I want to do is read your books. That's all I know.
She's so smart. That's what I love about you. As opposed to Sarah, who is, let's face it, kind of selfish.
Hey, I did say I was the right brain, so.
Yeah, okay.
I know, you are.
All right, so tell us, I'm sorry, I cut you off. The book club is.
You
lost me at my book. Because once you started talking about my book, I was like,
lost
what?
Interest.
Yeah, what? What is this?
And I only said Susie because she always picks the memoirs and the one, and I pick the fiction books usually.
Yeah.
And so somebody's got to pick like the murder mysteries and stuff like that. You write one of those, I'll pick your book. Mm. You got one of those?
So just murder somebody real quick.
Then we're good.
I mean, someone dies in my book. Does that count?
Yeah, that's true. That is dark.
Am I giving away the end? He dies.
Spoiler alert.
He does not make it out. All right, I will.
Yeah, I tend to choose nonfiction for sure.
You tend to choose nonfiction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we pick books monthly and we just meet and chat about them in a Zoom type meeting where all of our book club members get to like drink wine with us and chat about their favorite parts. And there's usually tears and a lot of laughter. And
wait, does the author come? Do you bring the author in to speak?
I usually interview them separately if I can. Okay. And then I give it to the book club members, but they don't usually come into the meeting.
Right,
but I mean, there's always a first time for everything.
Right. We're very open.
Here's my audition. This is my audition for doing a reading at the book club. Are you ready?
Okay, let's hear it.
Oh, a reading. That'd be fun.
Here we go. Just a very short version. See if I can do it with my sexy voice. No. It's about a 25-foot drop from the Venice Pier to the Pacific Ocean, depending on the tides. To hear Brian tell it, you're only in the air for a second, but it feels like you hang there forever. With the lights on the shore, the adrenaline in your veins, the relentless, hungry roar of the ocean below, you are a perfect being, suspended on an invisible string, burning with possibilities. Then you hit the cold, black water, and everything goes hard normal. You're wet. It's dark. The ocean is heaving you up and down, and it's a quarter-mile swim back to shore, unless you get slammed into a pylon and knocked unconscious. There you go.
Oh, man.
You're hired.
I'm in. I got the job.
Yeah, that was good.
All right. There we go. Book club. I'm in. Brain candy.
I don't know if I can handle it emotionally.
No.
I'll have to prepare so much wine.
So much. No, seriously. How are we doing? How are we doing
I'll
on this
steal
one?
Myself. Real good. This was a godsend.
It's good. And I got to tell you, I do mean it when I say that this is the thing that gets me with podcasts. Okay. There are shows like The Daily, which I love because it's just my dose of news in the morning when I go.
Yeah.
And then I like shows on the celebrity front. I like Conan because I like the interviews that he does. And then there's that whole genre of podcasts with Rogan or Marc Maron or, you know, and then there are the ones that I just enjoy because it's like I'm spending time with friends, you know, and I don't know you. We didn't know each other before this, but I feel like I know you because you have that effect in the podcast. Like there's a warmth to it, an openness to it that is it's an art. It's a talent to do that, you know, to seem that effortless and to make people feel as though they're part of the conversation with you, you know? Yeah. And you guys are really good at
sweet.
You do a great job of that. I think it's a, you know, Half the time, I don't even necessarily care what you're talking about. And I mean that in a good way. I just like listening to you guys. I think you have a great banter together. Like you have obviously a lot of love for each other, a lot of respect for each other. And it comes through. It comes through. You're not trying to.
Man, you're gonna make me cry over here.
But I'm saying, I
just love Susie so much, and that's why it works.
Well, you know, we've all listened to podcasts where you can tell that they're thinking about the next thing they're gonna say, and they're not having a dialogue with the person that they're on with. And with you guys, you're having a dialogue, and I think it's always entertaining and fun.
We always say how we got paid to be ourselves when we were on Real World and Road Rules and the challenge. And this is such a great extension of that because the audience sort of feels like they grew up with us, and they did. And this is just a continuation of that relationship we've had with the audience. And whenever we do have our book club, we look at the people in there and they all look just like us. It's so weird. And I get why they connect, because we are speaking their language.
I think that's a good place to leave this. I don't want to leave, but I got to drink the rest of this wine.
You got to move on with your life.
You made me read some of my book. Now I'm sad and depressed. I'm just going to go.
Are you, walk though?
No, I'm kidding.
I want to know.
I am not.
And if you are, I can give you my card.
And Sarah's nearby. I can just get over there.
Hold on a minute.
Yes.
Was this your only sibling?
No. No, I have others.
How many?
So I have two more brothers and two more sisters.
That's a big fam.
One of six. Yeah.
Well, my mom and dad got divorced when I was young, so I don't do that. You know,
what number are you?
I'm number one, baby.
Wow.
I'm number one.
You're the oldest.
And what I'm number the only was one. He?
Brian was second. He was 10 years younger than me. He was 31.
10 years?
31
Get out
when
of
he
here.
Died. Yeah, 31. But yeah, we'll talk about that in book club.
Okay. Deal. Yeah.
I want to thank Sarah Rice and Susie Meister for spending time drinking wine, talking about my balls, talking about your, what do we decide it's called when they fix your vagina? Vagiplasty?
Labial
reconstruction. Something I'm not paying for with my tax dollars, sister. It's really great having you guys on. I want everybody, please check out Brain Candy Podcast, available everywhere. Podcast stream. You got some merchandise on there.
Mm-hmm. We got merch, baby.
Oh, you like this shirt?
Look at that thing. That is it.
I'm even wearing some.
Look at that.
Because a lot of people need this reminder.
What does it say?
It says your, but correctly.
Oh, because, the spelling. Yeah, yeah,
you know.
Especially the trolls.
Oh, I know.
Are very
the
unaware.
Reply guys.
Who
they
knew?
Need the reminder.
Who knew that they couldn't spell?
Yeah.
You know what? Their head's full of so many great ideas. You can't get tripped up on
no
the spelling.
Time. No time for something.
I got no time for this spelling and knowledge. Look what it did to Susie Meister. Fucking ruined her Fox
downhill.
News career. If she would have just not learned anything, she'd be famous now.
Set
rich.
For life.
But no, please.
And instead, she's famous and
yes,
average.
And a very cool
regular.
Person. Where can people find you on the social medias?
At Susie Meister on Instagram. What are you, Sarah?
I'm a Sarah Rice on everything.
Yeah.
And consistent. Brain Candy Pod on Brain Candy Podcast on Instagram, thebraincandypodcast.com.
You know,
for your shirt.
And I'm at the Imbiber. To imbibe is to drink. People know that.
Mm-hmm.
If you realize I was that clever. And I want to leave you with a quote that I think is sort of apropos to what we talked about today. This is from Malcolm Gladwell, and he said, "We all assume that if you're weak and poor, you're never going to win. In fact, the real world is full of examples where the exact opposite happens, where the weak win and the strong screw up."
Wow.
See you next
David
time.
Goliath.
Isn't that deep? Deep. All right, that's all I got. And we're done.